Devoncast
from Radio X.
We've got everything you need for the festive season in this special edition of Devoncast, looking back at some of the people who've been making the headlines around the county in 2024. I'm Guy Henderson, and I'm joined today by my local Democracy Reporting Service colleagues Alison Stevenson and Bradley Gerrard. So, Ali, I feel like I'm letting the side down a little bit. You said Christmas jumpers today, and I don't have one this year.
Yeah, well, that's really sad, I think, to be honest. I mean, I've got about 10, so...
Oh, really? For the benefit of people listening, you have a Christmas jumper on with Santas and presents and yeah. trees and everything yeah. on. It's yeah, magnificent. And you have a sound effect for us.
I do. Oh, here we go.
And that's your earrings.
It is. I had to stop at the hat. Because I knew you weren't wearing anything, or you were wearing something, but not Christmas.
Yeah, that sounded very wrong. I am fully dressed here, but nothing Christmassy, unfortunately. Yeah, I did have a Christmas jumper up until last year, and it was awful, moth-eaten old thing. I got rid of it, and I haven't got another one since.
Well, they're everywhere, Guy. There's no excuse, really. I'm hoping you'll get one in your stocking for sure.
I hope. Well, the most desirable one in Torbay, of course, Torquay United produced their own Christmas jumpers this year.
Oh, did they?
Yellow and blue Christmas jumpers, and they sold out almost instantly.
Oh.
I didn't get one. A lot of people didn't get them. They ordered hundreds of them in, and they sold so quickly that they've gone.
Wow. So they'll be bringing those back then,
They'll be bringing
year.
Those back next year, but they ran out of stock very, very quickly. They sold like hotcakes, and I did not get one.
Your name would be on that for sure. You know, putting yourself down early for one of those, being such a big fan.
Well, it's funny. Daughter and I were going into a game and the club shop was open and the jumpers were in there. And I thought, I'll have a look at those when we come out afterwards. They'd gone by then.
No way.
They were just snapped up. So if you see anybody wearing a Torquay United Christmas jumper, it's a much sought after garment.
Okay, do you want me to offer them some money for it?
No, I think the moment's passed. We've been looking back through our Devoncasts over the past year to pick out the best bits for this seasonal selection box. We've got MPs starting their new jobs at Westminster after an election night filled with surprises, and we hear some of the reasons why so much changed in Devon in that momentous few hours.
We hear how Torbay could be making more of its famous daughter, and we'll bring you the moment we found out that one of our political leaders went to school with Nigel Farage. An electoral expert came in to tell us what he thought would happen when the UK and the US went to the polls. An Exeter pioneer talks about how she got started on a nationwide campaign aimed at keeping people safe on a night out. And a star of Saturday morning television divulges some of his secrets. And we hear a startling story of unrequited love at the Liberal Democrat Party conference. It's all here on the Christmas and New Year Devoncast.
In Torbay, early in the year, just as the first tourists started venturing west, we caught up with Carolyn Custerson, the chief executive of the English Riviera Bid Company, which oversees the bay's tourism industry. She told us how the bay could make more out of the heritage of its most famous daughter.
My aspiration is that we take Agatha Christie much broader, and that we regenerate the Agatha Christie mile, and that Torquay is known for Agatha Christie as much as Stratford is known for Shakespeare. Because we've never quite grasped it, Guy. We've never embraced it. You drive in to the... you know, from Kurzweil Gardens, and we did put signs up saying birthplace of Agatha Christie. But, you know, this is birthplace of the world's greatest crime writer. And we've just not made enough of it. I think there should be, and we are looking now to utilise some of the funding to produce a much more tangible Agatha Christie trail with international translation. So you would turn up at Princess Pier, where she used to roller skate, it'd be a QR code, and then you could do a language translation, because we get so many people coming from all around the world for the Agatha Christie link.
In April, one of Devon's longest-serving local politicians, John Hart, announced he was stepping down from his role as leader of Devon County Council. Mr Hart, first elected in the then ward of Wembury and Erm in 1989, became Devon's opposition leader in 2007 and won power for the Conservatives in 2009. Among his various achievements, Mr Hart noted his pivotal and central role in the reorganisation of Exeter's school system, which required 5 new secondaries, a new primary, and 26 others changed to accommodate the incoming primary and secondary system. Furthermore, he told Devoncast how he secured far more funding for the revamp than even his closest allies suspected he'd be able to, netting £79 million compared to the expected £57 million. Having been in politics for such a long time, though, Devon Cast wanted to find out about the things he thought were different now when it comes to being a councillor.
People want instant answers today. They want much more instant reaction, and they really want it solved if it's possible. It's come at a time when we have less money and less ability to be able to do it. But I do find that if you tell the people the truth, that you can't do it, and you explain why you can't do it, they do accept it. You're getting the problem, but it isn't your problem to solve. It is changing. It has changed, certainly post-COVID, but even pre-COVID, we were going from originally a fax machine to mobile telephones to now Teams meeting. Everything is faster, everything is jammed up. A lot of the time, we don't really finish something before we go to the next. And that is a mistake. I've always said, finish it first. That's what we've got to do. Do what you're doing. Get it finished. Then you can move on. Otherwise, you have too many unfinished bits hanging around.
After stepping down as leader, Mr. Hart took on the role of chair of the council, which he will relinquish in May 2025.
In the run-up to the general election, we spoke to a lot of the candidates as they prepared to go to the polls. Among them was the leader of East Devon District Council, Paul Arnott, who stood unsuccessfully for election in Exmouth and Exeter East. He told us what an old schoolmate of his was like back in his early years.
Well, I can, if it's any use to you, I'm afraid I'll just confess this. Even though I was there on a scholarship, I was at school with Nigel Farage. He was 4 years below me. I suppose in some ways I'm the man who could have altered the course of history, couldn't I? You know, but anyway, he was at school exactly as an objectionable little monomaniac, attention seeker, as a 12-year-old as he is now, and he was completely out of kilter with our very sort of kindly meant education.
Don't forget, of course, that lots of people voted for Nigel Farage, and his party has 5 seats in the House of Commons now. They have 100,000 members and millions of pounds coming in donations.
The general election, which took place during the first week of July, threw up some stories across Devon that nobody could have predicted even a few weeks before. Well, maybe our election expert, Dr. Dave Brockington from Plymouth University, could have. His predictions were incredibly accurate. We'll catch up with him later. One of the headline-grabbing results of the general election was the defeat of Veterans Minister Johnny Mercer, whose 13,000 majority at the last election was wiped out. The Conservative MP for Plymouth Moor View was well and truly beaten by Labour's Fred Thomas by 5,600 votes. Mr. Mercer famously left the Life Centre in Plymouth after the result without talking to journalists, while Mr. Thomas delighted in his victory. With Labour's MP for Plymouth and Sutton, Luke Pollard, safely returned to his seat, most of Plymouth turned red, with only Rebecca Smith flying the flag for the Conservatives in some outlying areas of the city when she won the South West Devon seat. Here's Fred Thomas, followed by Luke Pollard, putting out a rallying call for cross-party working.
I am over the moon. I'm honoured and delighted, and it's really the privilege of a lifetime to be elected as a Labour MP for the community that I live in, my neighbours, and to represent this constituency in Westminster will be an absolute privilege. I was very hopeful that residents would choose change and put their faith in myself and in the Labour Party to deliver that change.
Johnny Mercer won with a very large majority last time, so it must have been quite a feat.
Well, look, I think that's down to residents and people having a desire to see politics back in the service of ordinary families, ordinary households. So that's the reason for a relatively big swing, but I'm over the moon.
Over the past 7 years since I've been elected, our parliamentarians haven't worked together, and I'm excited about the chance of working with Fred Thomas as two Labour MPs in a region with many, many more Labour MPs now. But for me personally, we have to change the way we do politics in this country, and that means working on a cross-party basis. People across the South West have voted for change. They've elected not only Labour MPs, but Liberal Democrat MPs, a very small number of Conservative MPs, and I think it's now up to those parliamentarians that have been elected to put aside their party differences and to make sure we're working in the interests of our region and our city. And we've got a lot of work to do to make sure we're getting our fair share, and that work has to begin now.
New MPs proclaimed a Lib demolition as some huge Conservative majorities were swept aside. In Torbay, Lib Dem Steve Darling overturned the 17,000 majority that Conservative Kevin Foster took into Election Day. Mr. Foster was in no doubt when he spoke to me at the Riviera Centre that the conduct of politicians on the national stage had had an effect.
Well, look, we've seen many issues that people have been concerned about, and we inevitably have to say that things like some of the infighting people have seen in the Conservative Party. And as Sir Robert Buckland put it, you know, performative politics, rather than really focusing on the day-to-day delivery of effective governance and of people's priorities.
So do you think, in a way, what was going on nationally, and you can go back as far as Liz Truss, you can go back as far as what happened during COVID, do you think in many ways that's hung people out to dry? Hung people out to dry like yourselves, constituency MPs, you haven't had a great deal of support from the centre?
Well, I think, Guy, you know, we have to accept the judgment and not try and say that, you know, it's all just the fault of the National Party or whatever. But I think we can look back to things like Partygate, we can look through things like the Liz Truss administration and some of the jockeying for position. Even, let's be honest, the night before the general election, we were seeing a Conservative leading figure making sort of overtures and pitches for leadership. You know, we need to get back to basic disciplines, basic professionalism, and really start working hard on what is our offer for the future. You know, what is our offer to someone aged under 40 who wants to own their own home? You know, what is our offer to the person who wants to save for their retirement? What is our offer for someone who wants to develop and grow a small business? We need to answer those questions to win back the trust of the British people at a future general election.
Sewage has kept many of Devon's MPs busy too, arguably none more so than Exmouth and Exeter East MP David Reid. Mr Reid, a former Royal Marine, campaigned hard on the issue of sewage spills into the waterways in his constituency and was kept busy in relation to the matter in the first few weeks of being elected to office.
I'm absolutely incensed about what's happened now. So I've been elected for just over a month, and within that time frame, we've had a massive burst pipe down in Exmouth town, and we've had now another burst pipe just off Exmouth Beach. The effect that it's having on our town, both on locals' well-being, on the local economy, so local businesses, and then also tourists. People are coming down to Exmouth to enjoy our beautiful beaches and being turned away because there's sewage in the water. It's been absolutely outrageous. Now, there are ways ahead that I want to move forward with. I've campaigned heavily throughout the last 12 months on trying to clean up our waterways. And now that I am elected, I've been trying to work out a route forward to try and get the fastest fixes so that we see a reduction in the sewage outflows across our constituency, and then also the reduction of the use of storm overflows.
Mr Reid met with South West Water boss Susan Davey, and shortly after, the firm conducted an analysis of Exmouth's sewage system to identify what fixes were needed. Mr Reid, and indeed all of Exmouth's residents and tourists, will be hoping that beaches aren't closed during the busy summer season again next year due to unsafe water conditions.
Exeter has been a divided city in recent months, as communities had their say over the controversial low-traffic neighbourhood experiment in and around Heavytree. Here's campaigner Ian Frankham, followed by Exeter Green councillor Diana Moore, discussing the issues with Bradley Gerrard and Paul Nero.
And I agree that they can work. However, in our case, it was really poorly thought out. It's poorly executed. One of the main benefits, so to speak, was to increase safety. Well, Ladysmith Road, a freedom of information to the Devon County Council, will show you that there were no accidents there in the last 5 years. Since they've had the OTN, they've had two accidents that we know of, and many near misses due to the configuration now, which is far more dangerous than it was prior to. The council did do a consultation. They didn't need to by law, but it was very limited. It was online, so many elderly were excluded from it. And that showed when they had a public meeting around it, and people were queued around the park in Heavytree to register their concerns in relation to it. And I got motivated from that. So many elderly people not having a say. And as the OTN has been in progress, the impact it's had has just grown and grown and grown.
Ian Frankham doesn't believe it has reduced pollution, simply concentrated it onto fewer roads. And he also isn't convinced it's made any of the streets surrounding the LTN any safer either. But in spite of his and the community's vocal opposition, he says it feels to local residents that they simply aren't being listened to.
The only real survey that's been undertaken, and I know those in favour of the LTN will say it's biased because it was undertaken by the Conservative Party. And trust me, I'm no Conservative, but it's the only real survey that's been undertaken. 1,700 letters through the doors, 85% said it wasn't working. And I guess the frustration in the community is that it appears that the local politicians really just aren't listening or even taking cognizance of the evidence that's kind of staring them in the face.
Diana, I know you're an Exeter City Councillor, not a Devon County Councillor, but he's saying the politicians aren't listening.
I don't think that's true. I think politicians are listening, and if they weren't before, they certainly are now. I mean, that has been a successful element of Ian's campaign. But, you know, I've been out speaking with residents, joining my Heavytree councillors in Heavytree, listening to people. And it's really interesting to hear what they have to say. And in fact, people aren't speaking with one voice. There was a whole range of views. There's people who really don't want it. There's people who really do want it. And there's a whole range of people in between who've got different experiences or can see benefits but have some difficulties and actually can understand why there is a trial in place. So it's complex and it's really exciting to see the community involved and taking such an active part in what they want the future of the neighbourhood to be.
Many of the people who are affected by this adversely are not saying this is exciting. They're saying it's actually disturbing their lives.
Yes, people are saying it's disturbing their lives, but people are also saying that issues such as air pollution is disturbing their lives. Children who can't get to school safely and people who are worried about people who rat run through their areas. There's all sorts of problems that this scheme is raising.
There was no doubt that the Exeter traffic experiment had an impact on the council elections in May. Some councillors found their votes down on expectations, while others saw their shares go up as the low traffic neighbourhoods divided opinions. One effect was the success of independent councillor Lucy Haig, who was voted onto the city council on the back of her strong opinions on the issue. Here she is, moments after being elected.
I feel that people probably voted for me because they are frustrated about the low traffic neighbourhood in Heavytree and Whipton Barton and the effects that are having on the other areas of Exeter and the fact that they have not been given a voice to express their concerns. And that is why I've stood to give them that opportunity. I'm going to take the opportunity to sit down with different departments. I'm going to challenge some of the decisions and I will be taking their voice to the corridors of Exeter City Council.
2024 was the year Tavistock led the fight against on-street parking meters and won. The town's Business Improvement District, or BID, was able to prove through a survey that people would visit the town less if meters were installed. It was also estimated that trade could drop by half. Devon County Council proposed the idea for eight towns with an aim of reducing congestion and air quality problems and increasing turnover of cars. But campaigners in Tavistock said these problems didn't exist in their town and their 1 hour of free parking was working very nicely, thank you, for traders and shoppers. They held public meetings, travelled en masse to County Hall to make their protest and got their county councillors involved. Other towns followed suit, saying it would be the death knell for the high street. In the end, it was a victory for people power. BID manager Jana Sanders and trader Dottie Allen told us why they didn't want the meters.
The current situation on the high street is really difficult. And if we had people having to pay for parking, I just think it would put them off coming into town. We've already done a survey of people. 88% of people have already told us that that will change the way that they use the town centre. Even if there is a free period, it's not going to be easy, certainly for some of the demographic that the town centre serves. So it will just be easier for them to go to out-of-town retail areas like the supermarkets, and that will put them off coming into town. Footfall is critical. It's critical for the town centre and we really need to make it as easy as possible for people to carry on supporting it.
I don't understand why we suddenly have to start paying for parking. I understand that other smaller towns within the borough have been doing that and have been doing it for a long time, but I don't understand why Tavistock, with the high street in the situation that it is at the moment, with a number of closing shops and more to come during the next 12, 24 months, why we suddenly then have to pay for parking and incur another pain for people to come into the town. We need to be encouraging people in the town. We've got 3 months of roadworks surrounding the town, and actually when they get into the town, do we then want them to have to hassle parking? I don't think so, and it's no good for local trade.
You're listening to Devoncast, which is available on the Radio X website and app, from your regular podcast provider, and on Devoncast Radio, which is on DAB across most of the county.
In the aftermath of the trees being cut down in Plymouth and Marder Way in March 2023, the City Council has been working hard to get the city back in the news for all the good reasons. A new scheme for the city's main thoroughfare has begun in the last few weeks, and there are more than 300 projects progressing in the city, from housing developments to public roundworks. Plymouth was also judged as the best place to live by consultancy firm PwC in September for quality of life and economic performance. With thousands of new jobs in Devonport Dockyard and high-tech marine industries and green energy planned over the next few years, Councillor Mark Lowry, the city centre champion for the ruling Labour Party, shared his thoughts.
I mean, I've been trying hard, along with many other councillors, and I know everybody likes to knock the council, you know, because it's sort of almost an institution for us to do that in the UK. But I know from the officers I work with and fellow councillors, and businesses, everybody, you know, the Chamber of Commerce is really pushing for us to move forward. And I think it is our time now. We're seeing more businesses opening. We're seeing wages increase. We're seeing school educational attainment going in the right direction. There's a huge investment happening, or about to happen, in the dockyard. Massive investment in the dockyard. We're talking nearly £1 billion. You know, that's going to provide a lot of new job opportunities for our city. A hospital needs to be extended and considerably. That's massive sums of money. And the council alone, we've got over the next 5 years a capital programme in excess of £500 million. And when you add to that, you know, the natural private investment that would take place, you know, we're in a boom time, really, for our city. Mm. We just need to make sure that we capitalise on the best interests of those who live here. So we need to make sure that those people who do live here get the opportunity for those jobs, get the opportunity to join the housing ladder and get the home they want, and access that new public realm and the, you know, the National Marine Park. I mean, that alone, the first National Marine Park in the whole of the United Kingdom is in Plymouth, you know. I mean, today's a sunny day. Go and visit the home. Mm. Jesus, it's just amazing, isn't it?
Exeter's on the up too. At a city council meeting, we recently heard that it's one of the fastest growing cities in the country and the biggest economic powerhouse west of Bristol. Some of that success is down to the Exeter Business Improvement District, which has just been endorsed for the next 5 years, a kind of cooperative of local businesses all chipping in for promotions and improvements. Our guest Nicola Wheeler, Chief Executive Officer of the Exeter Bid, told us a bit more about it, and had a few words for a well-known author.
There are 735 hereditaments, which is a new word I've learnt, and it's basically the kind of properties that make up the district. But we represent about 670 unique businesses. So that means that some of the businesses have multiple properties. They get a vote for every property that they are occupying. But yeah, 670 businesses in the Exeter Business Improvement District, and 44% of those are independent, which is a really high proportion, I think, goes to show, you know, the unique offering that Exeter has. So the smallest businesses in the city will pay probably £100 or so a year, and the larger businesses, like your national chains, will pay maybe several thousand pounds a year. And our job is to really make sure that every single business, whether you're a big one or a small one, whether you're an evening and nighttime economy business or you're in the daytime, that all of the businesses see a return on investment for that. So the kinds of services that we deliver, there's a multitude of things really, but our whole remit is around making the city great. We deliver all the Christmas lights in the city centre. We've delivered 10 street art projects to really improve the vibrancy of the city. And as well as that, we provide dedicated support services for our businesses. So that might be training around compliance, things like fire safety, first aid, mental health at work, as well as we provide a photography service where we can provide a collateral of images for our businesses. And we have dedicated kind of comms communications channels to our business members, sharing important information with them, like up and coming consultations that they might be able to respond to, changes in legislation, and information that is happening within the Bid District.
The great travel writer Bill Bryson was a bit sniffy about Exeter. Notes from a Small Island, he described it as a clone town, and somebody said to me the other day he got out as fast as he could. Do you think we ought to invite him back?
Think we should invite him back. I think we should. What a rotter. No, I totally, wholeheartedly disagree. I mean, as I said to you at the beginning, to have 44% of our business members as independents, I think that we really have got a unique offering. You know, people love stumbling down 4th Street and uncovering all of the wonder that is there, as well as Gandhi Street and along Sidwell Street as well. You know, there's so much on offer. I Bill Bryson, if you are listening, you're invited to come to Exeter and enjoy a day with us.
We also had Exeter City Council leader Phil Bialik in the studio to talk about the soaring success of the city. But, he told us, finance continues to be a worry for everyone in local government and there could be some tough decisions ahead. And, he said, he might just borrow an idea from the football field to make things go more smoothly in the council chamber.
Job. I want us to be able to do more things in Exeter. But, of course, it's the money. That is the issue. We've had funding cut over the last 14 years to the tune of something like 60 pence in every pound. And we've still got to make savings over the next 3 years of 5.7 million. And I'm in the middle of sort of preparing a budget which will bring a further 3.5 million savings. Now, that's very difficult because the wicked issues, as you say, there are things that we need to look at. Can we do it better? Mm-hmm. And can we make a saving? And that saving sometimes is, unfortunately, doing it with less people or doing it in a better way.
Talking about finance, I mean, you and your local government association colleagues, because this week, obviously, the conference is happening. You'll be taking a role in that. There are problems ahead, aren't there? We now have a Labour government, but the public finances are in a bit of a state, to say the least. Councils all over the country last year, there was a lot of talk about bankruptcies and Section 114s. That's not going to go away, is it? There's no magic wand here.
No. Well, I can pleased to say that I've got a good team of officers at the City Council working very hard. We're nowhere near a 114 matter. So we work very hard to balance the books. Now, local government, I don't know if people know this, is one of the few government agencies that we have to balance the books each year. So I understand Rachel Reeves when she says, I've got to balance these books. And there may be some older people who can remember Clay Cross in the 1960s about that council. I was only a lad. I can remember that. We are not going to go bankrupt in Exeter. We're not going to get commissioners in running this. We will continue to run it on behalf of the citizens of Exeter. But there are some decisions that we will make. But what we will be doing over the coming months is consulting and asking residents and the public various questions of what is important to them.
Because you're a football referee, so you must be used to getting a little bit of sledging here and there.
Well, yeah, I suppose you look at my career, I was a union official for 35 years, so I'm used to people shouting at me and some people shouting at me on the football pitch. I don't mind. I wouldn't mind having a red card and a yellow card in the council chamber. Perhaps I need to introduce that. That would help me quite a lot.
In November, Americans cast their vote in a momentous presidential election. We loved having Dr. Dave Brockington in the studio this year. He lectures in politics at Plymouth University and came in to see us before the general election. On that occasion, he predicted almost all of the Devon results correctly, when hardly anyone else did. He came back just before the American presidential election, and while he declined to put the deeds to his house on a prediction of the result, he said there was no doubt about the importance of the vote.
It has been called by political scientists and historians in the United States as the most important election facing American democracy since 1860. And I'll leave you with the words of General Kelly, the four-star United States Marine general, who was Donald Trump's chief of staff for almost 2 years during his administration. He basically says he has, and this is Kelly's quote, this isn't my words, this is Kelly's quote, General Kelly's quotes, he has fascistic tendencies. And if a four-star Marine general is concerned, I can understand how other fellow Americans are likewise concerned.
We find ourselves now right in the middle of the party season, and pretty much everyone is out enjoying the festivities. But these can be dangerous times. One of our studio guests this year was Exeter campaigner Dawn Dines, whose mission to raise awareness of drink spiking moved on leaps and bounds this year. She explained to us what her Stamp Out Spiking organisation does, and then told us the terrifying story of how it all began.
Well, it's a national charity and it's been set up to educate and campaign on all spiking related crimes. And it all started for me back in 1989 when I was on a round the world trip and some guy was trying to take me out for a meal and he kept sort of on and on for months saying, come on, come out with me. And I had a boyfriend in England at the time and I was like, look, you know, I can't go out with you. And he said, look, just as friends. And I said, right, no funny business. And he was like, OK. So he took me out for a meal and we ordered some drinks and I went to use the bathroom and I'd forgotten my bag. So I went back to the table and his hand was like hovering over my drink and it moved really quickly. And I thought, he's done something to my drink. And all the hairs on the back of my neck went up. And I thought, yeah, well, what's he done to my drink? Anyway, I went to the bathroom and I thought, when I come back, I'll do a James Bond thing and swap the glasses. But I didn't. I climbed out of this little window I could hardly fit through and I ran for my life. And do you know what? I never saw that guy again. So my suspicions were confirmed because I thought, well, why didn't he come in, you know, and say, why would you leave? Yeah, yeah. Why would you do that to me? So that was the first time back in 1989. Then in the early 90s, a friend and I were living in Mexico and we were working over there and we went out for lunch. And, you know, I've had so many victims of spiking that people always assume it's done in the night time, in the dark, in a club, you know, and it's not. It can happen at any time, in any place and to anyone. And this just goes to prove it. So this was a lunchtime. My friend and I were in there and a tray of drinks got sent over to us. And we took the drinks and we felt like a pair of film stars. We were like, you know, we were only youngsters and we were like, oh, you know, we've been sent some drinks. And I caught a look at this guy with the waiter and I was like, in my peripheral vision, I saw him sort of nodding his head or moving his eyes. And there was some like little steps going down this restaurant to this room. And again, all the hairs on the back of my neck went up and I thought, they've done something to my drink. And we drank most of them. So I threw some money down on the table. I grabbed my friend and we went back to our apartment and we were walking up the stairs. And I'll never forget, our legs were so heavy. We were helping each other up. We got into our apartment and we were out cold for over 30 hours. So whatever drugs they'd put in our system, number one, could have killed us. Number two, if we'd stayed there, I don't know what could have happened to us. So it led me onto this huge path of trying to do something about it.
Yeah.
And I've been campaigning for 20 years. And I know one of your presenters, Ashley, said to me, oh, my God, when I walked in this morning, Dawn, you've been doing this for years now, which I have. And luckily, it's got to the stage now where everybody is listening.
They were hardly ever off our screens at one time. And Saturday morning TV stars Dick and Dom are still as busy as ever. They joined us to talk about Christmas. And bogeys, the game they invented to the horror of parents everywhere. Ali, I'm going to have to explain how bogeys works
now. Yes, you are.
The idea was that you'd get two children in a public place somewhere and they would say the word bogeys beginning at a very low volume. So you'd be in the middle of the supermarket or the library or somewhere like that and one of the kids would go, bogeys. And the next one had to increase the volume ever so slightly and it went back and forth. And the outcome eventually would be that you would have two children shrieking the word bogeys in the middle of Sainsbury's. And it was, I mean, it was a bit of fun, but we asked Dick McCourt and Exeter lad Dom Wood about the game.
Listen, if you two guys were sitting for 2.5 hours in Exeter Cathedral, you know a game that you could have played to pass the time, don't you?
I don't think it'd go down very well.
You get arrested these days for that. It's funny, we still get, you know, tagged in on videos now on social media. Kids have kind of found it on YouTube and they've started playing their own games of it all around the country, yeah.
It'll never go.
Does it follow you around?
Yes,
out to you
every day.
Not as much as it used to. It becomes less and less because a lot of kids don't know. We haven't done Kids TV for about 7 or 8 years now. So, yeah, kids don't know who we are, but certainly the adults do.
Alison Hernandez secured her third successive term as the Police and Crime Commissioner for Devon, Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly in May. Back then, as the dust had barely settled in the Plymouth Life Centre following the vote count, she told Devoncast that one of her key aims was to get the situation with the force's Chief Constable sorted out by the end of the year. At that stage, Chief Constable Will Kerr had been suspended since July 2023 and the force's Deputy Chief Constable, Jim Colwell, had become the Acting Chief Constable.
The priority for me will be sorting out the chief constable to create a substantive chief constable to lead that force. We're not in a healthy situation at the moment. We're in limbo, it feels. And you need a chief constable there who understands that they are fully responsible for that performance. I mean, about 90% of the decisions a chief constable will make will be operational and will have absolutely nothing to do with me. And I need to make sure that they're competent and that they are really driving that performance. So I think that's the one priority I've got to sort out this year. Regardless of whatever happens with the investigation.
Since then, however, the situation has become more complex. Mr. Kerr remains suspended after allegations of sexual offences in Northern Ireland, where he worked before joining the Devon Force. Mr. Kerr has strenuously denied the allegations. The investigation has now moved from the Police Ombudsman of Northern Ireland to the Public Prosecution Service, but a decision on whether or not Mr. Kerr was being charged had still not been made by the end of November, and no further update had been made public up until the date of this recording on 19th of December. Then in November, Ms. Hernandez suspended Mr. Colwell for alleged professional standards breaches, prompting a referral to the Independent Office for Police Conduct. In December, former Dorset Chief Constable James Vaughan, QPM, became the interim Chief Constable for the force. Ms. Hernandez told the Police and Crime Panel in November that she was very saddened to still be waiting on the outcome of the investigation into Mr. Kerr, and so she will be hoping for more clarity in 2025.
Now, local democracy may be our game, but we dabble in a bit of the arts and culture here on Devoncast. And as it's Christmas, we can't not mention the annual panto at Plymouth Theatre Royal, which started its run on December the 13th and continues until January the 11th. This year, it's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and a whole host of stars, including sitcom favourite Leslie Joseph, Devon's own comedy genius Andy Ford, and that man of many talents, TV personality and criminal barrister Rob Rinder, or Judge Rinder, as many of us know him, is starring in that too. I got the enviable task of heading down to the very lovely Warrington Hall near Plymouth for the launch of the panto this year, and that was well before December, so I had to get that Christmas spirit on, and I was greeted by a mountain of glitter and sequins as I got there. Here's Rob Rinder talking about his love of panto and Plymouth people.
I did my first panto about 3 years ago in Bristol, again with Leslie Joseph. That was magical.
Yeah,
that was my first encounter with theatre, so I love it. And there are so few things, aren't there, that bring together every background, every age, every community to delight in the same space and watching the same thing. And that's what makes it so special.
Yeah.
So I thought, yeah. And my first love was theatre. I did National Youth Theatre when I was 14 and then stopped and became, inverted commas, serious. But in the work that I've recently done, I've been reminded that, you know, you don't always have to be the most serious person in the world. You know, and I'm Jewish and I don't necessarily celebrate Christmas. I get to have Christmas with my panto family and with the community down here in Plymouth. It's just lovely. It is full. Whenever you come, however early in the season or even after Christmas, you get just the distilled joy of being alongside, you know, family, with everybody laughing. And nowadays, let's face it, there's very few moments to do that. Mm. You know, you come back to my legal career. I remember cases, sometimes challenging cases, where people in their statements would talk about family life and whatever challenge they'd experienced. Often they'd say the one time that they were happy as a family or enjoyed being in the same space in some instances would be that transformative experience of coming to watch a panto. Mm-hmm. So I really love it. I don't put it too high to say it's a sacred space to that extent.
And I'm guessing the last time you might have had this much glitter on was when you were in Strictly.
Well, actually, I did The Man in the Mirror after that. But yes, definitely. Although that also had spray tan. So happily, given the mirror, who's translucent, I'm not going to look quite as orange as Craig Revel Horwood this year.
And did you do any dancing in the show at all?
Again, come and see. You never know. You never know. But I suspect there's a high probability of that.
So Plymouth itself, I mean, what do you think of it so far?
Gorgeous. What's a collective noun for Plymouthites? Is it Plymouthists?
Well, they're called Janners.
Okay, that's what I've heard about. It's got a language, isn't it? Like, yeah.
Well, they're called Plymouthians, I suppose, Plymouthians. If you want to be posh about it.
Plymouthians, and generally people from the West Country are so proud to be from here because it has its unique cultural climate. You know, it's its own thing, and I love that. And they also are no-nonsense, which is obviously what I like. That looks terrible on you, that does. You know, they're those people.
And we promised you unrequited love from the party conference season. Sounds dramatic, doesn't it?
It does.
Had to save this one. Had to save this one up until last. We sat down with new Torbay Liberal Democrat MP Steve Darling to talk about his first few months at Westminster and how he had learned to live with being constantly in the shadow of Jenny, his guide dog, who has her own fan club on social media and causes a stir wherever she goes. With Jenny sleeping peacefully on my feet, Steve told the tale.
It was... People were saying to me, Steve, what's it like going to conference after so many years as a new MP? And I was saying, I have no idea, because it is actually just being what it's as if I was walking round with one of the Gallagher brothers at conference rather than being a new MP. And whilst it is an absolute nothing but a privilege and a pleasure that people want to come up and have a selfie with Jenny and sometimes with me, that it is. It does kind of get in the way. So just as in Westminster, I have to add in time for selfie time because, you know, visitors, etc., want a quick photo with the famous Jenny. It's more like adding 10 to 15 minutes if I'm walking anywhere at conference. And in the Liberal Democrat conference in Harrogate, I'm going to actually ask them to put on the programme, perhaps at the end of proceedings in the auditorium at lunchtime, that there's a 15-minute Jenny selfie time.
So you're the second most famous person in...
It has been actually relatively embarrassing for me, the amount of national media coverage that I've had with Jenny. I've had to go up early in Westminster in July because there was, you know, outlets wanting to do interviews with me. Also, I was in September. I've been on breakfast television on ITV around a guide dog, around discrimination against people with guide dogs, which meant I had to go up early on last thing on a Sunday when I'd already booked my tickets to go up first thing on a Monday morning. But I'm not going to complain about it. If I can squeeze in there by the popularity of Jenny the dog about the beautiful bay that is Torbay, and Torbay being the premier resort for the United Kingdom, I will squeeze that in. And also, it's like at the Liberal Democrat conference, we had a couple of puppy walkers where guide dogs wanted to use it to try and recruit puppy walkers, because there's a bit of a shortage around puppy walkers nationally at the moment, people who take on young guide dogs from, you know, literally small puppies to about 12 months old and getting them into good habits of how to engage. So it would myself, my wife, with her guide dog Pepsi, were walking up and down, you know, off the beach with two guide dog puppies and about a dozen photographers. There was a crowd of photographers around us, and you were thinking, this is just utter madness. However, it was true, Brighton, because one of the younger puppies, he just wanted to have sex with Jenny on the beach.
On that bombshell, thank you very much, Steve.
My pleasure.
Devoncast has been created by Radio X and the Local Democracy Reporting Service. Thank you for listening, wherever you're listening and whatever you're doing while you listen. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, you can find us on Devoncast Radio, on DAB across most of the county. Have a happy, healthy and peaceful Christmas, and stride boldly into the new year. We'll be back on January the 9th.
Catch the latest episode of Devoncast every Friday at radiox.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts.